Well, Happy New Year to you. Some of you may have seen the little memes that have been going around when you realize that this year is pronounced 2022. It may give a little pause, but the Lord's in control regardless of, as we look forward to that. So looking forward to what the Lord has for us this year. We're going to, if you would go with me to 2 Samuel this morning, we're going to go back and pick up kind of a parallel study to what we did last year. Last year we did the minor prophets. We did a study on the minor prophets, which I had consulted with Pastor and consulted my memory, which is certainly not infallible, but I could not remember a study on the minor prophets in Sunday school or main services in my time being here. And the pastor said, "What are you thinking about doing next?" And I said, "Well, this is what I'm thinking about." And he said, "Well, hold off on that. I may be doing something along that line." And then, about 6 weeks ago, he said, "Nope, the Lord's leading me over here this way." So we're going to go back and kind of lay the kings of Israel and Judah side by side with what we've looked at with the prophets. So kind of put some of that history of Israel together. We've heard recently, a pastor last year, year before, did a series on 1 Samuel and spent a lot of time on the life of David. So we're going to, skip over that and pretty much just pick up with Solomon and go forward. But I really think that that kind of lays the foundation for this study. There's a tremendous amount of material that is applicable to us. This is kind of a basic timeline. It's easier to see on my screen than that one. But the exodus from Egypt was approximately 1446 B.C. And then what we looked at in the minor prophets at the time of Malachi is 425 B.C. So a period of approximately 1,000 years. Okay, the period of the kings covers a good chunk of that, but not all of that. This timeline is harder to see than I thought it would be. But you had the entering of the promised land 40 years after they left Egypt. Then you have the period of the judges, which was about 350 years, okay, approximately. But the first king of Israel was Saul, and he became king around 1050 BC. Okay, so simple math, 1446 to 1050, round it off. You're our mathematician over here, Ben. How many years is that approximately? 1446 to 1050 is approximately. Hey, good job. You win the prize. You can ask Mrs. Maeda what it is because I don't have one. But we're talking about approximately 400 years. Okay? So from the time God led Israel out of Egypt under the hand of Moses until the first king was anointed was approximately 400 years. Okay? The time from Saul until the first captivity was a little over 300 years. Okay, so the period of the kings, wasn't tremendously long. From the time of Saul to the time of the Babylonian captivity is just a little over 400 years as well. So anyway, that's how the major timeline divides up. You've got from Moses leading them out until the first kings about 400 years, from Saul to the Babylonian captivity, where you really had the last king deposed. That was 400 years, give or take. And then you had, another 200 years in that period of the prophets. But you had Saul at 1050, David 40 years later, Solomon 40 years later, and then it gets really, really interesting. Okay? So, let me see here. Let's see if we can get it to go to the next one. This is a list I've had before in the other notes. I'm not going to go through it in detail. Just a basic overview, but the highlights that we've just given you. 1050 is when Saul becomes king. 40 years later, David becomes king. 40 years later, Solomon. And then 40 years later, at the end of Solomon's reign, the kingdom divides. Okay? Approximately 200 years after that point, the northern kingdom went into captivity to Assyria. Another 100 years plus later, then the southern captivity goes into kingdom to Babylon, captivity to Babylon. And then when they were allowed to return, you had the return in three phases. We talked about this during the Minor Prophets study, but the Cyrus issued a decree allowing them to return, and some of them went back. They got started on the temple, worked a couple of years, they got stopped, and then they were allowed to start again. But that was approximately 538, 536 BC. And then it was another almost 70 years after that before Ezra showed up. But then towards the end of that time, you had Ezra and Nehemiah who led additional groups to go back and reestablish. While they were in the land of Israel after captivity, they never really had their own king. You know, they were allowed to go back under the authority of Babylon, you know, and then Babylon fell to Greece and then Greece to Rome and all of that. So, I mean, they had some, but nothing after the captivities. They had nothing like they had had previously with David, Solomon, etc., being their own rulers, okay? But as far as the kings of Israel and Judah, just a little bit of introductory material here that you all know, I assume, but it's important for laying the foundation. God's design for Israel when he brought them out was that their government would be structured how? It's Sunday school, it's okay if you know, give input here. If I step out here, does that help? But God designed that they would be ruled directly by whom? By God, okay? The fancy theological word for that is called a theocracy. Okay, a rule directly by God. God would rule them directly. It started out as God, you know, giving them instructions through Moses and then through Joshua and then through other leaders. You had that period of time, which was approximately 80 years, you know, 40 years of Moses and then approximately 30, 40 years of Joshua. But then you had rule by other leaders and judges, and that was the way God had intended. Who else was assigned in Israel to be teachers of and judges, teachers of God's law and judges when there were questions? The priests and Levites. Exactly right. I mean, that's part of the reason that they were scattered out. They were given, you know, cities among the tribes. They were to teach the people. The priests were to be the judges when there was a question of the law. And so God was ruling his people through those representatives, if you will. It was a representative government, but it wasn't one human leader primarily. You had the period of the judges, and what happened in the period of the judges was not that there was a consistent following of God. At what point in Israel's history was there a consistent following of God and doing right? Oh, I know, it was under Moses, right? No, that didn't happen. And happened under Moses. I mean, they didn't hardly want to follow Moses. They were, you know, just a few miles out of Egypt when they started with rebellion, and less than a year out, they refused to go in the land. So it wasn't under Moses. So maybe it was under Joshua. Is that when the people got it all together? And no, I mean, Joshua was the one that said, "Choose you this day whom you will serve," right? Okay. So then after Joshua, they got it figured out, right? Wrong. Judges chapter 1 tells us that the people served the Lord the days of Joshua and the elders that outlived Joshua, and then another generation rose up, and that generation just kind of did their own thing. And the period of the judges is like this, and probably more down than up, but they would get away from the Lord, and finally when they turned back to God, he would raise up a judge, and they would be delivered, they'd have peace for a while, and it was just kind of up and down like that, okay? But that was God's design, that they would be that way. The rule would be that way. Actually, I don't know if I told you 2 Samuel or 1 Samuel, but turn to 1 Samuel chapter 7 with me for just a minute. I want you to see with me 1 Samuel chapter 7. We think of Samuel as a prophet, and he was. But in 1 Samuel chapter 7, we also read this, 1 Samuel 7, beginning verse number 15. Samuel judged Israel all the days of his life, and he went from year to year in a circuit, Bethel, Gilgal, Mizpah, and judged Israel in all those places, and his return was to Ramah, for there was his house. Okay, so Samuel was a prophet, but he was also a judge. He was a transitional figure. He was the last of the prophets, or last of the judges, excuse me, and the first of the named prophets. There were other prophets from time to time. God raised up a messenger and sent someone a message, but Samuel was the first of the named prophets. You know, after him, you had Nathan and Gad, and then you would have Elijah and Elisha, and further on, then you had the writing prophets, you know, Isaiah and Jeremiah and all the other ones that we looked at in our study of the minor prophets. But at this point, Samuel was a judge. And in chapter 8 and verse number 1, it came to pass when Samuel was old, he made his sons judges over Israel. And we have the names. Verse 3, his sons walked not in his ways, but turned aside after lucre and took bribes and perverted judgment. So Samuel made his sons judges. His sons were not good judges. We can talk about why, you know, maybe another time. But his sons were not good judges. Verse 4, Israel said, hey, we got a solution. Now, was it a great solution? I'm going with no, okay? But they had an idea. Have you ever had a problem, a difficult situation, and you're like, man, this is not good. Get me out of this. I got an answer. Here's what we need to do. You ever done that? Okay? The key is not, well, never have an idea. I mean, that's not the right answer. But we don't see here where they went to Samuel and said, hey, this is what we think. Would you go to God and ask God, is this what God wants? Okay? It was never presented to the Lord as, what does God want for our nation? It was, this is what we want. We're tired of what we got. We're going to make this change. Verse 4, the elders of Israel gathered themselves together, came to Samuel and to Ramah and said unto him, behold, thou art old. Thanks a lot. You know, and thy sons walk not in thy ways. Now make us a king to judge us. Notice the last phrase, like all the nations. Okay? This was done out of human wisdom. It was done out of a desire to be like everybody else. This was not done strictly out of a desire to please the Lord or to have God's best. Okay? They said, we want a king. Verse 6, the thing displeased Samuel. Of course it did. Verse 7, the Lord said unto Samuel, they have not rejected thee, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. Okay, so here Samuel felt rejected, which, you know, is understandable. But God said, no, they've rejected me that I should not reign over them. So was God reigning over Israel at this point? Yes, through the judges and the leaders that he had raised up. Okay, God was ruling over them in his chosen way. Okay, verse 8, according to all the works which they have done since the day I brought them up out of Egypt, even unto this day, wherewith they forsaken me and served other gods, so do they also unto thee. Samuel, they're treating you like they've treated me. Okay, so what ended up happening? God told Samuel, you go and you anoint them a king. You're familiar with that story. He went and he, at God's direction, he found Saul. This is my personal, you know, take on it, but I think it's supportable from Scripture. Saul, God said, all right, fine. I'm going to give you a king who's just like you. King Saul was the king after Israel's own heart. Why do I say that? Because how was David described later? The king after God's own heart. Okay? God told Saul, I've sought me a man after mine own heart. And David's mindset was very different. But God said, all right, fine, you want a king? I'm going to give you a king, and he's going to act just like you, and I'm going to let you reap what you have sown. And that's what happened with Saul. Okay, God gave them King Saul. King Saul started out great. He won some battles. Was King Saul a man of God? No. Was King Saul a man of patience? Well, no, he was a man of impulse. He was a man of anger. You know, he was a man of selfish motives, right? Everything that Israel had done to God, now Saul is doing the same thing. He's mirroring those same character traits. And so God says, all right, fine, I'll give you Saul. He gave them a king who was just like them. Now, this is personal, you know, personal conclusion based on the study of Scripture. But as we looked at Christmas time, and as we looked at throughout the minor prophets, did God intend to send his son, the Messiah, to Israel? Yes. I mean, we saw that starting in Genesis 3. We followed that thread all the way through. Had God prophesied before this that the Messiah would come through a specific family? Yes. I mean, that was the line of Judah, eventually the household of David. I think based on that, you know, that and a lot of other things from Scripture, God intended to make David the king of Israel. Okay? That was God's plan all along. They just got impatient and got ahead of God's time, got ahead of God's plan. We want a king. All right, fine, you get Saul. And Saul's going to do a few good things and make a mess out of a lot of other things. I think that in God's time, he would have made David king anyway. Around the same time, probably. But he would have made David king, but it would have been done differently. It would have been God speaking to Samuel and saying, go anoint this person and I'm going to give you a king and now I'm making a transition. But they had 40 years of heartache prior to that because they got ahead of God's time. Now, none of you have ever done that, right? You've never gotten impatient, rushed ahead, and made a mess out of something instead of waiting on God's time. But Israel did that, okay? And so God gave them Saul, who was a king after Israel's own heart. So you have God's design for Israel and how he wanted them to be led. You have Israel's demand for a king, and then we see God's desired king. Of course, that's David. In 1 Samuel 13, we read the statement that we've alluded to here. 1 Samuel 13, verses 13 and 14, Samuel said to Saul, thou hast done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God, which he commanded thee. For now would the Lord have established thy kingdom upon Israel forever, but now the kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought him a man after his own heart, and the Lord hath commanded him to be captain over his people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee. Now, at what point in time did this happen to Saul? At what point in time was Saul rejected? Look at 1 Samuel 13, verse number 1. Saul reigned 1 year, and when he had reigned two, Saul chose him 3,000 men, and then you have this whole story. This was only 2 years into Saul's reign as king that God told him this. I'm going to choose me a man after my own heart. Okay? How long did Saul reign? 40 years. Okay, how old was David when he became king? Around 30. Okay, was David even born at this time? I mean, this was 2 years in. David wouldn't be born for another 8 years. And David was, you know, in my opinion, he was a teenager, 15 or 16, when he went and fought Goliath. And then, you know, he was the musician in Saul's court. He ended up fighting Goliath and all of that. He became Saul's son-in-law, you know, probably at 18 to 20 years old. Okay? So how long is God going to let Saul stew on this? See, this was only Saul's second year of being king when God said, I've chosen me a man after my own heart. And so now, what's Saul doing? He's looking over his shoulder. He's scrutinizing everybody. Trust nobody. Suspect everybody. That kind of a mindset, right? God's letting him reap what he's sown just by his own unsettledness. And, I mean, it would be after this another 20 years or more before David was, you know, started to be manifest to Israel. Okay, it'd be, you know, almost 30 years from this point, 25 years plus, before Saul would figure out David's the one that God's chosen to take my place. But because there's not a ton here between 13 and, you know, and chapter 13 and chapter 16, we sometimes run that together, but really from 1 Samuel 13, 14, and 15, you know, that covers probably 20 years of Israel's history in just a very short, summarized fashion. But God said, I'm going to choose a king after my own heart. That was David. All right? David, what was his primary occupation? He was a shepherd. And that's what God wanted, someone who would love and care for the people, not someone who would, you know, dominate and rule over in a selfish way like Saul tried to do. Okay? David had learned many valuable lessons as a shepherd that would be applicable as the leader of God's people. That was who God desired. It was King David, all right? So now, I got this a little bit out of order, but just to briefly summarize David's training in 1 Samuel 16 and 17. How did David get training at the hand of God before he, you know, really understood what was going on? Well, chapter 16, Saul needed a musician. And so he lived there at Saul's house, observed the court. In chapter 17, he went home and went back to keeping the sheep. And then he went and fought Goliath. In chapter 18, Saul promoted him. Then Saul got jealous and, you know, demoted him. But, you know, chapter 18, 19, and 20, Saul said, you know, if I'll let you marry the king's daughter if you, you know, give me, bring me proof of death of the Philistines. And so that's what he did. He was trying to set a trap for him. So you had David's training. You had David's trials. Saul said, good, let Michael be a trap for him. I mean, his bride was a trial. His, you know, marriage was a trial. His being on the run was a trial. All of that was part of his training. All right, but you have his training, you have his trials, you have David's fruitful years. That's recorded in the early part of 2 Samuel, chapter 1 through 10. He became king. He established Jerusalem. He desired to build a house for God. 2 Samuel chapter 7, God told him through the prophet, you've done a good thing that you wanted that, but I'm not going to have you do that. I'm going to let you make preparations and your son's going to build the house. Okay? But you had David's fruitful years in 2 Samuel 1 through 10. You have David's failure with Bathsheba in 2 Samuel 11. And of course, that goes rolls over into chapter 12. And then you have David's final years in the rest of 2 Samuel. At what point in David's life did this failure with Bathsheba happen? I think it's a little earlier than we sometimes think. You know, we tend to think he had this long time and then he kind of had a failure at the end of his life. But if you look with me in 2 Samuel chapter 12 for just a minute, 2 Samuel chapter 12, verse number 23, now he is dead, speaking of the child that was born as a result of the adultery with David and Bathsheba. Now he is dead, wherefore should I fast? Can I bring him back again? I shall go to him, but he shall not return to me. Verse 24, David comforted Bathsheba his wife and went in unto her and lay with her, and she bare a son, and he called his name Solomon, and the Lord loved him. And he sent by the hand of Nathan the prophet, and he called his name Jedidiah because of the Lord. All right, so now that brings us to King Solomon. This is where we're going to, you know, pick up our study. We're just, you know, laying a very quick summary foundation. You have his lineage. He was born to David. And, of course, we know here this he was the son of David. In 2 Samuel chapter 5, you have a listing of the sons of David that were born in Jerusalem. In 2 Samuel chapter 3, you have a listing of David's other sons that were born, you know, at his other various stops while he was still on the run, hiding from Saul. Some were born when he was made king in Hebron. He was king in Hebron over just Judah for a while, and then he became king over the entire nation of Israel. But Solomon was born to David in Jerusalem. He was the son of Bathsheba. Okay, Solomon was pretty young when he became king. We know that from his own testimony, right? When the Lord appeared to Solomon and said, name anything you want and I'll give it to you. Solomon said, I'm young and I don't know what I'm doing and I need wisdom. But, you know, just for argument's sake, and I don't think he was 12 years old like some of the other kings, you know, that are later on down the lineage. But just for argument's sake, let's just say that Solomon was, you know, 18 years old when he became king. I think that's a pretty conservative estimate. I think there's, you know, conservative commentators that would kind of fall in that same line. But let's just for sake of discussion say that Solomon was 18 years old when he became king. Okay? At what point in time did the incident with David and Bathsheba happen? I mean, you had that incident, you had a child that was born, the child died, and then you had another child that was conceived. That child was born and named Solomon. So, I mean, you're talking about, you know, the thing with David and Bathsheba happened right about the midpoint of David's 40 years, okay? Right about the 20-year mark. Because then, you know, if Solomon was born to Bathsheba and then David trained him up, we see a lot of that in Proverbs where, you know, the things that David taught Solomon that Solomon was trying to hand down to his son. But if, you know, just looking at that timeline, and I think Solomon was around that, you know, probably 18 years old mark. That means that what happened with David and Bathsheba happened, you know, probably right at the midpoint of David's time. So that's a long time for David to be, you know, reaping the consequences, right? Nathan the prophet told him he was going to reap fourfold, and he did. I mean, the son died, and then Absalom killed Amnon, okay? And then Absalom was killed, and then eventually Adonijah would die as a result of insurrection and infighting in the family. You know, you get the, you know, if you picked a word, if you bought the vowel A, you know, for Wheel of Fortune, you got a lot of a run on that one, okay? But David did pay fourfold in his family there. But, you know, he reaped that for a long time. But just in that context, Solomon was a baby. Solomon was a toddler. Solomon was a 8-year-old boy who's into everything and watching everything and all of that when what's going on around him. I mean, he's a young man when he's a youngster, old enough probably to know what was going on when Absalom decides he's going to rebel against his dad, right? So all of this goes into what were the formative events in the life of Solomon. You see, we read there in 2 Samuel 12 and verse 25, the Lord sent by the hand of Nathan the prophet and has called his name Jedidiah. That ah on the end of that is the short form of Yah, or Yahweh, Jehovah, and that name Jedidiah means beloved of the Lord. Okay, that's David gave him the name Solomon. That's the name that we know. That God gave him the name Jedidiah. He was loved of the Lord. Okay, but that is Solomon's lineage. He was born to David in Bathsheba. Now, do you think that that made him loved in his family? Okay. Did that make him loved and appreciated? No. Why? Well, number one, you had sons that were old enough to be adult sons who thought that they should be the next king, like Absalom, right? Because of what had happened, I think that what happened with David and Bathsheba and Uriah contributed to Absalom's disrespect for David. Now, I mean, do young people, you know, have to have some incident to get a rebellious attitude and disrespect for authority? No. It's called a sin nature, all right? But I think that contributed to it, okay? And so while he was a son, would the older sons have looked on Solomon or Jedidiah, whichever name you want, as, you know, well, they looked on him as beloved and desirable and respected? Ben, you're the youngest in your family. All your older brothers always treat you with respect, right? Yeah. I mean, they love and appreciate you, look out for you. They try to toughen you up by beating up on you every once in a while, right? You know, he was the younger brother. Okay? So for all of those reasons, David would have kept it to himself if he was thinking about making Solomon. But you think about the older brothers. Absalom, good king, good choice to follow David? Yeah, I don't think so. How about, you know, Amnon? Nope. How about Adonijah? Well, he proved himself unworthy. And we could go down the list of others. But, you know, this was the lineage of Solomon. He was born to David and Bathsheba. I mean, the older brothers didn't necessarily need a good reason to look down on the younger brother, but, you know, that the fact of the Bathsheba and the connotation of all of that, that would have given him one more reason to look down on him with disdain. Okay? Now, let's talk about his upbringing. He was raised in the household and the court of King David. He was raised in the house of David when David's major wars were over. Right? I mean, how did David get himself into trouble with Bathsheba? The Bible says it was a time when kings went forth to battle and David stayed home. You know, basically, I've served my time and, you know, I'm going to take it easy when maybe he shouldn't have. Okay, now, rest is important and I'm not minimizing that. But my point is, if David was, you know, around 50, you know, 50-ish when Solomon was born, then he heard about all of the exploits of David, his father, and there were a few more battles during Solomon's lifetime, but a lot of the major battles and the major fighting were over. Why do I say that? Because that contributed to the circumstances in which Solomon grew up. Did Solomon grow up like Absalom and Amnon and Adonijah, where they're moving from place to place and they got left over here for protection while dad's over here fighting. And, you know, now we finally got a place, but, you know, dad's going to build us a new house. He's going to call this, he and his soldiers are going to fight and they're going to conquer this city over here and he's going to call it Jerusalem and he's going to build us a house and we're all going to live in the same place and not have to keep moving. That was the household that Amnon and Absalom and Adonijah grew up in, right? That was their background. What was the home life like by the time Solomon came along? David was established. He'd built a house. He had fought battles. He had conquered enemies. He had established some wealth. We know from the end of 2 Samuel and the correlating passage in Chronicles, David had laid up a considerable amount of supply for the house of God. But Solomon, just like a lot of youngest children, had it easier than some of the older ones. Okay? And yes, I know exactly what I'm saying when I say that right now. Okay? It's really amusing to say that, you know, in a classroom at the college, you know, and you just talk about something with the oldest or the youngest. Boy, you talk about dividing the Pharisees and the Sadducees, you know, it's there. It's all. But yes, while it was in the same household, some of the circumstances were different. Okay? But Solomon grew up in a household of relative ease, did he not? It was not constant fear of his life. David had a nice household. He had some wealth. He had things established. You know, things were running. He had servants. He had a nice place to live. All I'm saying is that is what Solomon grew up seeing as normal, right? And then Solomon took it and built on it in an extraordinary way. Okay? But Solomon was raised in the household in the court of King David. But think about some of the men that he was around. Already mentioned some of his brothers, but let's think about the men of God. Who would have been around David's house when Solomon was growing up? Nathan the prophet, Gad the seer. Those were the spiritual advisors. Nathan's the one that went to David and said, yeah, that's a great idea, build the house. And God came to him the next night. The next day he came back and said, David, I was wrong. This is what God said. God said he wants your son to build the house. Okay? But you got Nathan and Gad would have been around. You know who else would have been around? Ahithophel. Hushai. Those names sound at least vaguely familiar, even if you couldn't, you know, you're like, please don't call on me to tell who that was. Those were the wise men. They were David's counselors. Of Ahithophel, it is said in the scriptures that when he gave counsel, it was as though a man inquired at the oracle of God. In other words, it is as though Moses or the high priest had gone in before the Ark of the Covenant and asked God for an answer, and God had given an answer back. Ahithophel was that wise. Now, Ahithophel was the grandfather of Bathsheba. He was bitter with David for what had happened with Bathsheba. So when Absalom rebelled, Ahithophel sided with Absalom because he had it out for David. Okay? Now, that Hushai is the one that came with David. And David said, you know, I really appreciate it, but you're more good to me if you would actually go back and defeat Ahithophel's counsel. Ahithophel's with Absalom. And if we don't do something about him, we're in trouble. So Hushai is the one that David sent back. And Ahithophel was asked by Absalom, what do we do? And he gave advice. And Hushai said, yeah, that's not good right now. We ought to do this. And God used that to spare the life of David. Okay? But, you know, he would have known, he would possibly have been around Ahithophel, but Hushai would have been around longer. Right? But you think of all of the other men that were like that maybe were unnamed. Those were the men that were available around that Solomon could learn from growing up. Now, we understand God said, I'm going to give you wisdom. And I'm going to give you, because Solomon asked for wisdom, God gave it to him. But you think God opened his head, poured it all in one night? No, I think God gave him extra capacity to absorb and some things by gift. But I think some of that came from absorbing the lessons learned from guys like David and Hushai and all of the counselors like that. Okay? But you had all of the people like that were contributors. I mean, if you ever stop to think about all the people that crossed your path, I mean, we had a chance to go and visit my parents at Christmas time, and there's not as many now, but there's still two or three ladies at the church that are the whole, yeah, I changed your diaper when you were in the nursery, because, you know, the church where my parents are, You know, that's where they were members when I was born, and they're still there. You know, there's a few that are still like that, you know, that remember, you know, way back when. Not as many now. But when you start to think about, okay, I mean, I think of them this way now, but yeah, they were there. They contributed to my life in this way, whether it's, you know, the Sunday school, children's church, you know, Christian school ministry, youth group, just telling me to straighten up, or I'm going to tell your mama, you know, whatever it is. You know, all the people that contributed that way, plus the people that you would consider friends, mentors. I mean, all of the people that have crossed your paths in life, and even some that you would consider enemies, you still learn from, right? But those are all the people that, you know, contribute to shape your life, your thinking, the way you are. Well, what were those influences in the life of Solomon? Well, it was Nathan, it was Gad, it was Ahithophel, it was Hushai, it was Absalom, Adonijah, Amnon, Joab, Abishai. I mean, these are names that if you pay attention, now some of you are like, yep, I'm out. You started giving Old Testament names and I'm out. I mean, I understand that. But if you pay attention to some of those names, you're like, man, yeah, those were main characters in the life of David. Solomon knew a lot of these people personally. Joab would have been his uncle, maybe, second cousin. I don't know. I don't follow the family tree that closely. I know some of you do, and you, every time I say that, somebody comes to me afterwards and explains how it works. Okay, but Joab was cousin to David or second cousin, something like that. So, you know, Solomon was related, is what I'm saying. But all of these people Solomon would have known personally. Would have had the chance to observe them. Some of them carried over into his reign as king. But all of these were factors that influenced his upbringing. Now, having survived the rebellion of Absalom and knowing the other unrest that was going on, do you think David was really anxious to announce who his choice would be? I mean, if Absalom had rebelled against his own father, Absalom had killed his own brother, do you think that maybe David was afraid to name a choice for fear of making them a target? I think so. But it's very interesting. After 2 Samuel chapter 12, where we're told about the birth of Solomon, we don't really hear the name Solomon anymore until 2 Kings chapter 1. Okay, 2 Kings chapter 1 is where, you know, David, you have the transition. David's health is declining, and another of David's sons, Adonijah, declares himself to be king. And Nathan and Gad come to David and said, hey, was this your call? But nothing else was said about that. And Solomon's name wasn't even mentioned in the rest of the book of 2 Samuel. It was just kind of anonymous. But we know enough about the circumstances, the stories of David and all of that, that can at least get our imaginations going a little bit, at least get our mind going. What was the upbringing of Solomon like? These are all the influences that contributed to that. But did he know David as the man who fought Goliath or, you know, the man who led the army in battle? No. He knew him as... Well, I heard all these stories about my dad. Some of these other people probably said, yeah, son, I fought with your dad when, you know, we took, you know, and they would tell him all the war stories. But he saw David in a different light. David at this point has done things right. He's done things wrong. And now he's beginning to say, all right, son, let me tell you some things that I've learned. Let me tell you some things that you ought to do. Let me tell you some things that you ought not to do. You know, don't do what I did. That was the stage of life at which David was, you know, a father and a mentor to Solomon. Do you think David ever regretted his parenting with Absalom, Adonijah, Amnon, etc.? I mean, he was more than likely an absent dad a good bit of the time of necessity. He's fighting these wars here and there and all of that, trying to get a kingdom established. I personally think that David tried to parent Solomon differently because of the mistakes he'd made with the other one. Okay, you know, that's just a fact of life. You can be stupid and make the same mistakes over and over again, or you can learn from your mistakes and not repeat them, right? So I think David, he had a different relationship with David, is what I'm saying, than Absalom, Amnon, Adonijah, and the other names that don't start with A that you can read in 2 Samuel 3 and 5. Okay? But that's a little bit of the background of King Solomon. And then we'll pick up next time, Lord willing, with the reign of King Solomon and that transition and when he became king. All right, let's close with a word of prayer. Thank you, Lord, for your word.